God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Today, Brother Hutchings and Dr. Larry Spargimino continue teaching from the book of Daniel in an 8-part series on the important prophetic book. If you're a student of prophecy, this is one of the books you'll consider as you look toward the end of the age. Here now is Brother Hutchings.
Thank you, Brother Jerry. Now, we're in the second chapter of Daniel, and as we learned yesterday, King Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and only Daniel could interpret the dream. In his dream, Nebuchadnezzar saw a great image. Had a head of gold, and we learned that the head of gold represented Nebuchadnezzar. Breast and arms of silver, that represented the next empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, of course, which today would be Iran and Afghanistan, that defeated Babylon in about 538 B.C. and took over that part of the world. That was the next world empire. And then Alexander came over from Greece and defeated the huge Persian army and took over that part of the world, all the way from India over to Egypt. That was the next world empire, as prophesied by the image. And then the image had legs of iron, two legs of iron, which represented Rome, East Rome and West Rome. We know that Daniel told the king that the legs of iron would break into pieces. And that began to happen in the Roman Empire about 500 A.D. The Roman Empire broke into many empires, the English Empire, the Dutch Empire, the German Empire, the Spanish Empire, the Italian Empire. And as we read, also, in its broken state, the Roman Empire, with all these pieces, tread down the whole world, which they did. North and South America, all of Africa, Far East, the island of the sea. But the image also had another part to it, and that was the feet and toes. We're going to consider the feet and toes because when we get there, we're coming down to where we live today. The interpretation of this image fulfilled or related to all the world empires from something like 600 B.C. until the time Jesus would come and set up his own kingdom. Dr. Spargimino, I think we have a few verses here in chapter 2 of Daniel that refers to the feet and the toes on this image.
Thank you, Dr. Hutchings. Beginning in Daniel 2 and verse 41, the scripture says, and here is Daniel giving the interpretation. He says, "And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever."
So we see the prophecy of the second chapter of Daniel, which is certainly one of the most important prophetic chapters in the Bible, refer to the times in which we live. Now, the Roman Empire system in its broken state endured until World War II. Now, at the end of World War II, Prime Minister Churchill was confronted with President Roosevelt and Joseph Stalin, the remaining two powers that fought in World War II and defeated the German Empire and its ally, the Italian Empire. And so they confronted Mr. Churchill, who was the remaining authority for all these broken-up empires, and they told him that the Roman colonial system was over. Roosevelt had an idea of a world community of nations, the United Nations, where all the world, there's going to be a world assembly and representatives from all the nations would come and there'd be no more war and all the problems would be settled in this forum. And of course, Mr. Stalin has his own ideas and reasons for breaking up the Roman colonial system. So they told Mr. Churchill that the empires that was formed after the breakup of Rome would have to give up their colonies in Africa and in the island of the sea and in Asia. There were dozens of these nations still under the control of the broken Roman Empire system. And so, of course, Mr. Churchill, I think he objected, but he couldn't defy the remaining two partners, who actually were stronger than England at that time. So the empires of Europe began to give up their colonies in Africa and other parts of the world. And so we see this was prophesied here, that the feet and toes would break up and be many parts, iron and clay together. And that's where we have today. We have the old Roman iron parts. Those are the colonies that broke off the Roman Empire. And then we have the new nations that have come into being and added to the United Nations. So we have this situation here prophesied in Daniel's interpretation of the king's dream way back there, 500 B.C. or more. But we come now to this time in history when we look at the toes, and the toes are thought to represent 10 kings. Do we see any evidence today of the world being divided up into 10 kingdoms or under the authority of 10 rulers?
Well, recently there's been some news about the world being divided into 10 regions. And of course, you know, each region would have its sovereign or its leader under a one world situation. The number 10 certainly does figure prominently at one time. Scholars believed it was 10 small countries, but I think perhaps as we look at the world situation, as we look at Agenda 21 and things like that, perhaps the real answer is the 10 regions of the world being divided.
And if this is the case, Dr. Spargimeno, then there's going to be 10 presidents or 10 rulers of these 10 different divisions. Today, we have a world economy. We have world banking, we have world political system, and the world today is in a state of political and economic fluid conditions. We'd hardly know from one day to the next what is going to happen. But the book of Daniel tells us here what is going to happen, and in the future, there will be a ruler called the Antichrist in the Bible, who will be the supreme ruler over these 10 nation parts of the world. We can already see that taking place. Now, as we continue on in the book of Daniel, we go to chapter 3. And chapter 3 is kind of an interlude in the book of Daniel. What about chapter 3?
Well, as we read at the beginning, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 70 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And then a little further on in chapter 3, a herald comes and cries out, To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And I think it's interesting, Dr. Hutchings, that this image or statue that Nebuchadnezzar had constructed was 60 cubits high, 6 cubits wide, making it approximately 90 feet high and 9 feet wide. Now, such a colossus would be very heavy. It would weigh several thousands of tons and of necessity would have to be built upon a sturdy foundation. And as you quote in your book, your commentary on Daniel, Fawcett's Bible Dictionary and Encyclopedia states that there was an archaeologist who found on the plains of Dura, southeast of Babylon, now called Duer, a pedestal on which a colossal statue once stood. So without doubt, the king of Babylon, probably around 585 BC, did dedicate a monstrous golden image. And either Nebuchadnezzar's heirs, who followed him onto the throne, or the Medo-Persians, cut the image up for the gold that was in it, leaving only the huge pedestal on which it stood. But there are, of course, material remains to indicate to us that this really did happen in history.
Certainly. We know that Daniel had great integrity among many kings and rulers and political heads, according to Josephus. And he would not have written this in his book had it not been an actual event. But Nebuchadnezzar had this dream about this great image with a head of gold, but then he didn't evidently approve of the fact that his kingdom was going to be overtaken or conquered by another kingdom, and so forth and so on. So he went out and built the whole image. Now, this was the image, I believe, that he saw in his dream. We read that he saw a great image. Well, this image that he built was close to 200 feet high, and he built it all of gold. He's telling, see, Daniel said, your God don't know everything. I'm going to build it all of gold, and my kingdom is going to last forever, because he was the golden head, and so he built the whole image of gold. So he defied God. He said, God is not going to have his way. My kingdom is going to last forever. But it didn't, of course. His kingdom was soon overtaken by the Medes and the Persians. But it's interesting, he commanded everyone in the kingdom to fall down and worship the image, which would have been worshiping him. That's what they would have been doing, really. And he proclaimed himself a god of the world or ruler of the world. But the Lord soon changed him. But now, he demanded that everyone fall down and worship the image. But there were a couple of them there who didn't fall down.
That's right. There were three Hebrew youths. Daniel is out of the picture. We don't know exactly where he was. There's a couple of theories about that. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, you know, King, we're not going to bow down before this image. Our God is able to deliver us. But even if he does not, we will not bow down before this image. And what a testimony, Dr. Hutchings, about their faithfulness. They realized that God was able to deliver them. But even if God had other plans, they still would not compromise their values. And I think that's a tremendous lesson for us today. A lot of times we say, well, if God gives me a lot of money and a lot of good clothing and so forth, then I'll follow him. But if not, I think I'll change my mind. Well, they said, no, we're not changing our minds no matter what happens. And I think that's very commendable.
Yes, and they were cast into the fiery furnace, probably a big brick kiln. You know, I was in Iraq some years ago, and traveling from Baghdad over to the old site of Babylon. Of course, there were brick kilns all along the way. At that time, they were rebuilding Babylon. Saddam Hussein wanted to restore Babylon to its former glory. But the king looked in the fiery furnace, and there he saw the three Hebrew children walking around. But there was someone else in there, wasn't there?
Like unto the Son of God, perhaps a pre-incarnate appearance of the Lord Jesus Christ. And, of course, we know that that has happened at other times, and that's certainly very, very characteristic. But, you know, you point out in your book, and I think it's a very good point that maybe we can spend a minute on, about the music. You know, the psaltery, the harp, the sackbut, all kinds of things, and as we see here, music had a role in creating blasphemy. And that's interesting. Today, the wrong kind of music is destroying our country. The wrong kind of music is lifting up man and giving man honor and glory and taking people away from God. And we see the same thing here in Daniel chapter 3, and I think it's very significant.
Yeah, it's being played in most of our churches today also. But also, what we see here in the book of Daniel also prefigured some events that were going to happen to Israel in the future. The three Hebrew children, of course, represented the nation of Israel. And we know during the tribulation period, the nation of Israel is going to be in the fire. Actually, the nation of Israel right now is already in the fire, but it's going to be even greater problem during the coming tribulation period. And we read here in the book of Zechariah about Israel's situation in the coming tribulation period, which was prefigured by the three Hebrew children in the fiery furnace. We read in Zechariah chapter 13, verses 8 and 9, "And it shall come to pass that in all the land, says the Lord, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third part shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. They shall call upon my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, the Lord is my God," meaning Jesus Christ, of course. During the tribulation, we know that Israel will come to the knowledge that Jesus Christ is the Messiah, and only less than 1% of the nation of Israel today believe that Jesus Christ is their Messiah who died for them, and that he's coming back to rule the nations with a rod of iron, and Israel will be the head and not the tail. They don't know that yet, but one day they will know. But it will come in a time of fire, meaning the fires of the tribulation. And one-third will be saved, according to Zechariah, through that time. And that was illustrated, I think, in the fiery furnace there in Daniel 3. But as we look into chapter 4, what is the subject of chapter 4?
Well, in chapter 4, very interesting chapter, because there's a great change in the manner of speech of King Nebuchadnezzar at the beginning of chapter 4. He's a different man. We move from the terminology he used at the conclusion of chapter 3, and then in chapter 4, verses 1 and following, it says, "Nebuchadnezzar, the king unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth." And he says this, "Peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders." Dr. Hutchings, he's praising the Lord. What a change.
Yeah, evidently the testimony of the three Hebrew children in the fire, and also the appearance of a fourth person there in the fire, had a great effect on him. So he is changed his story here, and he claims to be a man of peace. He's going to be a good person and not going to cast anyone else in the fire. But as we go into this chapter, what befalls him?
Well, he begins this testimony by relating something that happened, a dream that he had. At the time he dreamed this dream, he was at rest upon his throne. He was living in great luxury in his great palace in mighty Babylon. He had conquered all the nations that could possibly threaten his empire, and the wealth of the world was pouring into his treasury. But he had a troubling dream, and it turns out that the dream is speaking about the king being humbled. There's a 7-year period of humbling when he goes out and he lives with the beast of the field, and he is humbled. And then later, after all of that, he comes to his senses and he realizes that there is a God in heaven and that he's been wrong all along.
Yes, and he goes out and he lives in the field as a beast, eats grass. We read the description of his appearance. Also, we look into the book of Revelation, and we know that there is coming a 7-year period upon the earth when the nations will all be governed by a man called the beast. And, of course, this chapter 4 here prefigures that time. It's an interesting chapter, but it looks forward to the time. But at the end of the chapter, he is delivered from that condition.
Right, and he realizes that there is a God in heaven. And, in fact, Daniel tells him that he would be wet with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over thee till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. Wow, what a lesson. We need people today knowing that someone who is ruling in the kingdom of men, it's not the president, it's not the king, it's not the pope, it is the Most High of heaven and earth.
Amen. Now, on the broadcast tomorrow, we will get into the next chapter of Daniel. And if you would like my commentary on the book of Daniel, Brother Jerry is going to come now and tell you how you can receive a copy.
There are 3 ways to get the updated book: telephone, mail, and the internet. Number to call is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, P.O. Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. The website address is swrc.com. Daniel the Prophet is 308 pages in length and is available in the United States in appreciation of a $15 contribution. If you live in Canada, the gift amount is $17. An apt description of what you'll find in the book is the subtitle, which is A Comprehensive Examination of the Prophecies Concerning the Historical and Future Gentile World Empires. When the series is completed, Brother Hutchings and Brother Larry will have presented 8 programs, and they're all available on CD or cassette tape for an offering of $25 in the U.S., $27 in Canada. To get the book or the programs, call this number, 1-800-652-1144. If you prefer the mail, write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. A third way to get in touch with us is the internet at swrc.com. There are some areas where we aren't hearing from listeners very much, and we really do need for you to let us know you're there. If you listen over KPGM in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, WHYL, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, or KRTK, Pocatello, Idaho, please contact us. Thanks. Next, over many of these stations, is a Bible in the News report. Join Brother Hutchings and Dr. Spargimino tomorrow for more about the Book of Daniel on your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. Welcome to today's Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. We report on a recent news story and relate it to the Bible. Today's speaker is Dr. Bob Glaze.
During February 2007, we took a tour group to Egypt and traveled the full length of the land from Alexandria to Abu Simbel, having never seen a pig. However, according to an article found at CanadaFreePress.com, pigs have played a valuable role in everyday life there. The article was September 28, 2011, entitled, The Trash of Islam, describes how pigs have provided Cairo with jobs and food for the Zebalin families of the Coptic Christians. The article states, 2 years ago, the Egyptian city of Cairo, the largest city in the Arab world, and the timely city of Obama's Cairo speech, the heart of the Arab Spring, was suffering from a garbage crisis. The crisis had a very simple cause. The pigs that used to eat the garbage were killed to prevent the spread of swine flu. Unquote. Like Jews, Muslims are not allowed to eat or touch a pig. The law of the swine is laid out for the Jews in the Old Testament law of Leviticus 10:8. Of their flesh shall ye not eat, and their carcass shall ye not touch. They are unclean to you. Muslims have a similar law that provides the background for their feeling towards Jews and Christians. The garbage of Cairo was collected by the cops, taken to Garbage City, fed to the pigs in an inorganic, and the inorganic atoms sold. The article continues, it might be shocking for most people to realize that the trash collection system for the largest city in the Arab world, the capital of what passes for Arab-Muslim civilization, depended on a class of untouchable garbage collectors as young as 8 years old and their pigs to keep the city free from drowning in its own garbage. A system that is not simply medieval, but pre-medieval, that seems positively Bronze Age. And underneath them are the pigs. Kill the pigs, and the system collapses, unquote. Islamists warn to kill all who are not Muslims and consider all Christians and Jews pigs. However, they themselves are not capable of maintaining a civilized society without our help. It is a similar problem. Kill the pigs, and their system collapses. Exporting Sharia law to the United States will create a demand that all infidels must become Muslim or be killed. Who would then run the country or produce the essential for sustaining a lifestyle void of the essential pigs? The article adds, it isn't just the piles of reeking trash in Cairo streets. The Arab and Muslim world has been exporting far more dangerous forms of waste into forms of immigration and Islamic radicalism, and we are the Zebalin, the Christians and Jews who are expected to clean up, unquote. The Levitical law did not forbid coexistence with the unclean. They just could not eat or touch it. Every one of the unclean animals, birds, fish, or creeping things, have a purpose. One haunting question of many is the passage found in Luke 8:26-39. Why did the Jews own a herd of pigs? The answer is that Gadara was one of the cities of the Decapolis and consisted of mostly non-Jews. Verse 34 simply states, when they that fed them saw what was done, they fled and went and told it in the city and in the country. Later, these same men asked Jesus to leave the area because he represented a threat to their livelihood. Jesus never rebuked them for having the pigs, for evidently they were not Jews.
That's today's Bible in the News report of Southwest Radio Ministries. Be here for our next Your Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report.